This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
The problem with being a minimalist is there's nothing, the sound bounces off of everything because it's just walls.
1, 2, 3.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to the No Sidebar Podcast. I am your host, Brian Gardner, and I'm here to discuss the struggles around being and becoming a creative entrepreneur. Together, we'll identify what's standing in the way of you building and growing your online business. No Sidebar is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, a complete website solution for writers, designers, podcasters, and other online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform. All right, so last week I read and gave my thoughts on an article called On Being Digital Hoarders, written by Paul Jarvis. Today, I have the privilege of talking to him, and specifically about what he wrote. By way of his own website copy, I'm going to let him introduce himself first. Quote, "I'm Paul Jarvis. I create simple, meaningful things like best-selling books, courses, and websites for creatives and freelancers. I've had the pleasure of creating websites and digital marketing plans for Silicon Valley startups, pro sports athletes, Fortune 500 companies, best-selling authors, and the world's biggest entrepreneurs." End quote. I'm pleased to welcome fellow designer, fellow writer, and not fellow course creator, Paul Jarvis. Paul, thank you so much for being on the show and for doing it so quickly.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, it's my pleasure.
You know, it's funny. I've been following you for a long time. And this is how it is on the internet, right? You follow people, you communicate with people back and forth, and once in a while you get lucky, whether it's on the, you know, on a show or in person at a conference, to meet the people who hopefully you inspire, or especially in this case, the people who inspire you. So it's definitely a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thanks. It's the Mutual Appreciation Society.
Before we get started with the article, give us a 2-minute lowdown on who Paul Jarvis is in your mind.
So I've actually been struggling with this a lot lately because I've got a lot of balls in the air that I'm juggling. I'm having a hard time describing myself. So one, I design websites for clients. Two, I also have a podcast that I co-host with my friend Jason Zook. I also run a course for freelancers. I also write books and articles and mailing lists and all of that. So I do a lot of things, but they all kind of fall under the umbrella where I really like to help people and I like to feel valuable. So those are kind of the 5, 6, 7 maybe ways that I figured out how to do that. And specifically right now, I just like working with freelancers because I feel like I've learned a bit in the almost 20 years that I've freelanced. So I'm just trying to kind of pass that information along. But I don't know what I do, Brian. I have a really hard time with that.
Well, you're an artist, you're creative, so it's kind of ambiguous, right? We don't actually know what we do. We just kind of do our thing and hope it helps others or help inspire others or whatever. So all right, so I think first and foremost, you're a designer and a writer. At least those are the two mediums that I know you as. Which of those two do you enjoy doing best? And then I'm going to follow up and ask you, because for me, this is a different answer. Which of those two do you think you're better at?
So I think I like both. And I get asked this a lot because a lot of people nowadays in our kind of circle, you work on client work, which is for me web designing, until you kind of have a breakout product and then you can drop all of the working with clients and go focus on that product. But for me, I like working with clients. Like I actually like doing web design for other people. So I don't think I would ever cut that out. And the writing for me is more of the like one to many. I've made products, I've like best-selling books and courses and all of that. And I love doing those things, but I also like doing the web design stuff. So I sort of split my time 50-50 right now with some design stuff and some writing products and some just writing articles and that sort of thing. As far as what I like better, I think it's a toss up. Like today I like writing better. Tomorrow it's possibly going to be client stuff. And I find that the more I kind of oscillate back and forth, so a few months I'll be doing client work, a few months I'll be doing writing and products and that, the more I miss the thing that I'm not doing, and then I need to go back to it. And then the pendulum swings, and then I start doing something else, and then I miss the thing that I'm not doing anymore.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's the same thing. Back when I first got started on the internet, I was doing freelance design via WordPress themes for people. And the whole story of where, you know, Revolution and StudioPress and all of that got started was rejected freelance design that was in turn turned into a product, which then ultimately took me out of doing freelance work because the product was selling so much. And, you know, years down the road, it got to a point where as much as I love doing product design and themes, I also missed kind of that interaction and just having the one-off trying to solve one specific problem with a client. And, you know, so I've done things like Joshua Becker's Becoming Minimalist site. That was a freelance project that I just did for him. I said, look, dude, no payment. All I want to do is just solve the problem I think you have. And he was totally open to it. And it felt good to like go back to that kind of grassroots feel of, you know, working with a client in a freelance type environment. And so I totally hear what you're saying there.
Yeah, you did Courtney's site as well, I think, in the last few months.
Yeah, that was also, and she had thankfully, she's first of all, very meticulous and very organized, so it was easy to work with her.
Nice.
And she just, you know, like Joshua said, hey, I'm a minimalist, got to keep it simple, which of course, as you know, sometimes is harder to do because there's such a focus on just the design or lack thereof, and it's all about the couple of choices that you make. Both Joshua and Courtney were awesome to work with. So in addition to designing websites and writing your weekly newsletter, you also have a course called The Creative Class. Currently, you have, I think, over 800 students there. How's that going for you?
It's amazing. I didn't realize how interesting teaching would be. And I didn't realize how much I learn as the instructor when I have, because it's one thing to, because I've been freelancing for basically forever, almost 20 years. So I've worked for myself for a very, very long time. And I'm like, okay, Paul, you know some stuff. It's probably right. And then I validated it and I talked to other people and I did some research and stuff. And then I started a course and then it taught me how much I don't know and how much I still need to learn. And it's so interesting to engage with students. And I actually like this. And this is why, because I started out writing books and the books sell really well. And I figured, I think I want to try this like audience interaction engagement thing. So it's like, okay, let's start a course. And that was kind of night and day for me. I found that it's so much more interesting to be able to see how people are taking the content and using it, as opposed to just, I write a book, I sell a book, Amazon sends me the number of sales every month, and that's pretty much it. I may get an email or two out of every couple thousand people that buy it. Whereas with the course, it's interactivity with the students all the time, and it helps me create new content, refine the content I have, figure out better ways to bring, like, onboard new students and that sort of thing. So it's opened up this whole can of worms for learning for me, which I'm really, really enjoying.
Yeah, I think humble teachers are by far the best kind. You get people who think they know everything, they call themselves ninjas and whatever, and they say, I know everything, here's my stuff, buy it, and I'm higher than you. And, you know, like what you just said, how you kind of learn as being a teacher, and I think the ability to kind of be humble in that regard and realize you don't know everything, and maybe there's times where the students will teach you something, and that's a great, I think, kind of symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, it definitely is, and that's kind of how I approach everything, though. It's like in all of my, like, I'm not a thought leader or a ninja, or like in all of my writing, I'm kind of exploring topics. It's not just like, this is Paul's way, throw down the hammer. So that's kind of where I like to exist on the internet, is I'm learning too. Here's some stuff I've learned, but I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's all a learning. It's all learning.
Sure.
So articulate there.
Yeah. So, okay, you're a designer. You have a course. You've also written four best-selling books that are available on Amazon. Quite the creative renaissance man you are, I think. I've thought about doing a course thing, but I don't even know what I would write about. Maybe it's I have a lack of, I don't even know what the word is, but I arguably created the premium WordPress theme space, and people have asked me to write about that whole process. And at this point, it's almost been so long ago that I don't even know that I'd have anything interesting to tell them anyhow, but...
You do have a platform for courses.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I personally have a platform, but I'm still part of CopyBlogger, and so yeah. Any energy I put forth in that regard would have to be through the company, which is something I'm completely okay with, but maybe I'm just kind of saving it for later. I don't know, but there's plenty of other smarter, better course writing people in our company that I'm just going to stick to podcasting and design for now. All right. So speaking of being a Renaissance man, you have a design portfolio that would make a lot of creatives like me envious. Clients such as Dave Ursulo, Danielle Laporte, Marie Forleo. And just this morning, we responded to each other back and forth on Twitter about another one you had launched for a client. And I got to tell you, much like Bill Kenny over at Focus Lab, you're one of those guys who I love you and I hate you, because when I see the work you put out, I'm like, I wish I could do that, or I wish I did do that.
Yeah, I feel the same about so many other designers. Even when I look at your side, dude, like it's like, oh, I wish I could convince my clients to do that little in such a smart way. So it's mutual.
Well, thank you. I know, you know, as minimalist designers, sometimes I think designers over-design. There's clients who need, you know, so much on their sites and they want so much. And it's really hard for me to want to take that type of person on as a client, which of course is why, you know, Joshua and Courtney were so easy to work with, because they're like-minded, right? They minimalist, and they have a few things, and the focus is on one or two things. Joshua selling books, Courtney, you know, either to be hired or her courses and whatnot. And so I kind of stay away from those who have a lot of stuff going on, because I don't know that I could, you know, adequately solve their problem in a way that they would be happy with. And that's a kind of a tough thing. So
yeah, that's what I wrote about last week, about saying no to, because I say no to most projects that come my way, just because I feel the same. I feel like if I can't adequately get you to your goal as a client, then it's not worth you spending the money on me. So I'm pretty focused and determined in terms of, do I want to work with this client or not? And a lot of times it comes down to, I'm not the best fit for you. For whatever reason, I think there's probably like 6 or 7 reasons that I wrote about. I can't remember what they are. But yeah, I think it comes down to, it's okay to be picky with clients.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Because definitely you don't want to take on the wrong client for their sake and for your own sake.
Yeah, your portfolio is a reflection of the future work you're going to get hired to do, because people look at your portfolio and say like, oh, I want that. So if your portfolio is full of stuff you don't want to do, then you're in trouble, because you're just going to keep getting hired to do more of that stuff.
Yeah, you know, and I think on your website, you even mentioned that a lot of your design projects, or if all of them, come from referrals. So in that case, your portfolio definitely matters. Okay, let's talk about the article, because that's really what I wanted to discuss.
Sure.
As much as I love small talking with like-minded creatives, but the article is called On Being Digital Hoarders. And I like to consider these types of things that I read rants, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Would you consider what you wrote a rant, or was it just something that you wanted to say? You see the difference there?
Yeah. And I think a lot of what I write is that, where it's a rant, but then it's also a call to arms, which I think, so it's from my end, it's a rant, but from my audience's end, I hope it's a call to arms to, most of the time, with this specifically and with almost everything I write, it's to think, does this resonate with you? Does this seem like something you're unconsciously doing that you can now consciously be aware of? So I think that falls under that, where on my end, it's just me getting something off my chest. Like, let's be honest, it's me ranting. But then on the audience's side, it's, this is Paul's rant, but what can I do with this? And I think I'm very specific about the way that I put information across on the internet. And it can't just be Paul ranting for the sake of ranting. I have Twitter for that. And that's pretty much what I use Twitter for. But for my articles, it's like, ranting isn't enough. What can somebody take from that rant and use or apply or resonate with or act on, which is probably the main one, also the hardest one to get people to actually do. So that's really what this falls under.
One of the things I'm passionate about is authenticity. But one problem I have is this. I spend so much time talking about it and not necessarily enough of my time doing it. So after reading your article, it kind of made me feel the same way, where people spend so much time trying to research how to be productive, or, you know, how to not be inefficient, but they have a hard time succeeding and actually accomplishing that goal. Is that off base, or I guess what I'm asking is, you know, am I just doing these things, or am I doing them just to say that I'm doing them, but not really doing them?
Yeah, and there's a fine line, right? It's just like, if you want to get into shape, maybe you would do some research, but the more that you're researching, you're not getting in shape. You're sitting on your butt staring at a computer screen. So at some point, there needs to be actual physical exertion. You need to go to the gym or pick up that kettlebell or something like that. So I think it kind of needs to be a balance of obviously, we all need to learn things. We need to learn things all the time. The minute we stop being curious, we basically should just, we're basically dead because you need to be curious. But on the flip side of that, you need to actually take the information and do something about it or basically draw a line in the sand like, okay, I know enough. I can get started on something, or I can stop the research and start acting on the research. And I think that's something that's personal for everybody in every situation, but I think that needs to be questioned a bit, like, okay, is this enough? And can I move on to actually implementing things or actually doing things?
So piggybacking that, another great quote from the article is this, quote, think about it. If you're focused on learning about productivity, you're not technically being productive at all because you're spending all of your time learning about productivity instead of working. Yeah, I love the analogy to fitness because fitness in the head is different than fitness in your body. Or I could know what I should or shouldn't eat or what I should and shouldn't do physically, but if I'm not doing that, I'm still the fat guy with knowledge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so here's a question that I have in regards to the article. Was there anything specifically that you read or anything that happened that made you just drop what you were doing to write it? Was there like a Jerry Maguire moment where you said, I have to write this now, kind of in a manifesto way? Or was it just kind of an accumulation of, okay, this is enough for, and it's time to just kind of write out what I think?
Yeah, so pretty much every article I write starts with a specific, and then I abstract it into universal. So for this, and it was many specifics. Sometimes the articles I need to write just keep hitting me across the back of the head until I write them. So for this one, I keep getting at, because I've kind of moved into the course creation side of things, I keep getting asked by people like how to make them, how to build them. Like, and then I work with a few people kind of like, I guess it's like friend consulting. Like these are people I consider friends, and we just kind of like hop on the phone and talk out what we're working on. And a couple of them are working on their own courses and they just keep stalling for whatever reason, or they just keep like, they can't launch. They're in basically launch paralysis because they keep thinking, okay, well, I just need to redesign the lesson page for the 100th time, or I just need to add another 5 lessons to the course or something like, and it just keeps thinking, or I just need to learn a little bit more and do a bit more research and put it into the course, and then the course will be ready to launch. And I just started to think like, okay, why is this happening? Like what's going on with this? And it's hard because like I want these people to launch, and I feel like this is pretty universal. Like, and that's why I wrote the articles. It seems pretty universal where people kind of get stuck in the learning side of things and don't move on to the acting side of things. Whereas with me, I launch things mostly when I feel like they're not ready. Like the site isn't 100% designed, but it's good enough to put out there. A product is pretty much there, but not 100%, but I can always change it later. Even with my own course, I started out with the idea to have 30 lessons. That's a lot of lessons. It would have taken me 2 years to do that. Sure. So I scaled it back to 7, and then I launched. And then I've kind of been tweaking and researching as I go and adding more lessons and adding more value and adding more stuff to the course. So I think that's really where the impetus to write this came from, right? Like it's just, How do we know when we've learned enough to move forward on something? I don't have the answer to that. And that's just kind of where the article stemmed from. So yeah, I think that's pretty much why I wrote it.
Yeah, I think we as creatives, entrepreneurs, whatever, I think we have a tendency to, you know, have stage fright, or maybe it's a lack of confidence. And so it feels safe to kind of stay within this, you know, regurgitation of consumption on productivity and, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to be productive and I'm going to go do this. But, you know, as I said earlier with authenticity, I spent so much time just kind of living within that I wasn't actually doing anything that was authentic. I was just talking about authenticity. And the podcast here, the first handful of episodes, I felt like that was where it was going. And I was thinking to myself, all right, now it's time to actually add value rather than just kind of spin my wheels and talk about it and actually go do it without even talking about it. And I love what how you close your article. Like we've talked earlier about the challenge, right? So here's what you wrote, quote, So next time you see an article on life hackery or some list of actions you could be taking, if you weren't reading a list on taking actions, ask yourself why you're searching externally for advice or shortcuts when you could be working on taking action in your own way, using your own brilliant mind to figure things out.
I like that. I don't even like most of the stuff that I write, but actually I like the last few paragraphs in that article quite a bit.
And I'll talk about this on the show that I haven't recorded yet, but in an inception kind of way will be the show that precedes this one. In other words, I'm going to read through the whole article and kind of, throw in my editorializing. I don't even know if that's a word, but...
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
It is now.
Yeah. It's abstract. We're creatives. Of course it's a word.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you, give my audience kind of the thoughts as I read through it, because I agree with so much of it, and I'm convicted more than anything on so much of it. And so I actually look forward to recording that. But those two final paragraphs were definitely home run hitters in a, positive way to encourage people to basically thinking about productivity. And I think, like you said earlier, there's a kind of a fine line, and it looks different for, each person. Maybe some people need a little bit more consumption of said material before they're ready to launch. Others, like me, probably don't need much, because there's really just a fear thing that blocks me from stop trying to, be productive and just go do it. And, they say just ship it, right? That's the key phrase.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is self-reflecting a little bit and kind of analyzing that, because if it's just fear that's holding you back, then you've got a problem. Because a lot of times, I'm afraid of everything. I just am. But if I look at the things that I've done and done well with, I've been afraid of them, but I've still taken action on them, which looks a lot different than I want to launch this, but I don't know how yet, and then learning enough to be able to launch it. But then when it's just fear, then it's kind of like, okay, really, Paul, what's the worst that's going to happen here? You're not going to die some horrible, embarrassing death if you launch this thing. You're just going to launch it. If some people don't like it, they wouldn't like anything that you launched anyways. So I think a lot of times it just comes down to, with this and with everything, a little self-reflection on the motivation. Not even the motivation, but what's keeping you from being motivated to act?
Yeah, that's a good question to internalize. I know for me, 99% of the time it's fear. It's not a lack of knowledge. It's not a lack of access to resources or the ability to execute. It just straight up is, I can do this. I know I can. I'm capable of it. I've proven that I can. But every time I go to ship something, whether it's a piece of writing, whether it's a design, oftentimes now it's, trying to edit and record the podcast show. It's just a matter of pushing the button. And I'll quote her probably on every episode here. Ruthie Lindsay talks about the whole authenticity and fear of rejection, and the things that we think people will feel about us end up usually being the opposite. And so as creatives, here we are thinking, oh, everyone's going to hate this. And sometimes we'll do things that are sort of safe, like throw up a teaser on Dribbble just to kind of gauge what the audience might respond with.
Yeah.
And, sometimes that's all it takes. I'll throw something up on Dribbble or in a Facebook group, and people will say, oh, I love that. And that's maybe all I need to just say, okay, good. There's probably going to be a positive response here. So the fear subsides, and then it's just a matter of executing and getting it out the door. So,
yeah, I also find the things, especially with my writing, the things that I'm the most afraid of, like hitting publish on, are the things that resonate the most with my audience. And that's I schedule my newsletter and my blog post a week or two in advance, because then if I had to just hit send, I would be too scared. I would chicken out every single time. So, but if I schedule them for a week or two in advance, it's like, oh, that's in the future. You're not gotta worry about that, Paul. It's coming up. Who cares? And I schedule it, and then it sends out, it publishes on schedule. And then I forgot that it was going to publish on schedule, and then it does. So I have little things in my brain that help me get over and act on the fears that I have. Because I'm the same. I'm afraid of doing all these things. I'm afraid of all of the rejection or anger. I get hate mail every day. It's just weird. I don't even understand why. That doesn't stop me from doing the things. And these aren't people that were really going to buy anything anyways. I don't really get hate mail from people who have bought a book or bought a course. They're just people that have their own stuff going on, and their criticism is more a reflection on them than it is of anything that I've made or haven't made anyways. It's hard to deal with, yes, but it's also pretty much every time more about that person than you, even if you are getting criticized on the internet, because it happens.
Yeah, they say when you get hate, mail or, you know, when you get haters, that means you've arrived. And, you know, I don't get a ton primarily because I don't think I put myself out there enough to warrant, not even to warrant it, but because I play so safe, and this is the one thing I wish I could totally change about myself, and as No Sidebar kind of evolves into more of a creative movement for those who are in the space and to be authentic in our ways, like, I really hope to kind of push that a little bit more and be a little bit more bold in the mm-hmm. way that you have with a lot of your writing. And so speaking of the hate, just in general, let's talk specifically about the article, because I'm guessing there's some productivity activists that may have responded. Have you gotten any negative response to that article that we're talking about here?
Not specifically about the article. That's fine. Like, I'm friends with some people whose job it is to teach productivity to people. And they laughed at this article because it's like, it's fine. Like, they understand this. And the reason that they teach productivity is not the reasons that I'm talking about in the article anyways. So I think it's fine. I talked about inspiration and motivation and how seeing like 50,000 inspiring quotes over unsplash photos on Instagram isn't really that inspiring to me. And I know a lot of my readers do that. So I got a bit of negativity from that. I don't know. I even get people like, I guess there's two kinds of criticism that I get. There's the dissension, which is fine. I sent this out and somebody replied and disagreed with it. Is totally fine email. And she was very respectful. And it was just like, I don't agree with that. And I'm like, good on you. I'm glad you don't agree. You're thinking. You've taken action on exactly the thing I wanted you to take action. And then sometimes it's just like, your writing sucks. there's no reason to, like, I don't even need to engage in that. I had the week before this one, somebody sent me a nasty email. So, and here's a pro tip. If they reply to your newsletter, you can scroll down and click your own unsubscribe button. It takes them off the list. I did that for this person. So I did that to this person. And then they emailed me every single day asking why I didn't reply to their first nasty email. It's just for things like that, it's like, you have something going on. Please go deal with your own stuff, dude. I cannot help you in any way whatsoever. And he had a problem with one of the articles that I wrote. And it's just like, that's fine. This isn't like Paul's word is the only word. It's like, this is some opinion that some guy on the internet has. It's okay if you disagree. I disagree with lots of stuff I read. It's fine.
Yeah. You know, it's one thing to disagree and like the first person you talked about, you know, say, hey, let's just talk about our opinions and do it in a, you know, nice way. But, you know, when you're a douchebag and you write something like that, you have to just roll those off. I know Derek Halpern is a great example of a guy who I'm sure gets hate mail all the time. Not because he's a bad guy, just but because he's so flamboyant and so convicting in all of his thoughts. And he's so, probably to his own admission, he's so over the top. And I love him and I love what he does.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Someone writes, it sucks, or, you know, I hate your writing or your design. Like, that's great. Okay. Like you said, clearly, and I'm a total believer, when people usually are nasty like that, it's totally their own baggage they're dealing with. And oftentimes there's, and I mentioned this in the show a few weeks ago, you know, when you're envious or, you know, when you trash people, there's usually a degree of that envy there. In other words, mm-hmm. I'm going to knock someone down because I'm jealous of what they've done. And so, you know, it makes me feel better to say, well, Paul, your article on productivity was like totally lame and I don't buy it and it's garbage. And it really means, hey, it struck a nerve. It called me out on something in my own head that I know I'm struggling with. And instead of, you know, saying, hey, thanks for challenging me, you know, the baggage just gets in the way and makes you, you know, come off like a tool. So,
yeah. And to some degree, they're kind of acting on my intended action. They're just not really internalizing it and thinking about it. It's striking a chord and they're just lashing out instead of like, why do I want to lash out? Maybe I should think about that just a tiny bit.
Yeah, maybe they're reacting rather than taking action, which I think are two totally different things. But
agreed. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Maybe in the coming weeks, as I focus No Sidebar more onto creative entrepreneurs rather than kind of where it's at now, which is just design a simple life, which is, I don't even know if it's definable, and I haven't been able to really pin that down. But hate in creativity would be a great thing to talk about even further, not just, you know, a few minutes like we talked about here. Mm-hmm. So I might be pinging you, you know, in a few weeks and say, hey, let's just hop on and riff about being hated by people and what that means and how, Because the reality of no sidebar is what gets in the way of succeeding, you know, from a creative standpoint. And hate and negativity really could be a huge, huge, huge detriment to creative person's success. And so...
Yeah, I know a lot of people where that's held them back or that's kept them from launching, like, product two after they launched product one. And sure. 1,000 people loved it and one person hated it. And then it's just like, that's enough for some people. And it's horrible that that happens. And it's, yeah, it's so difficult to deal with because we kind of live in an age where everybody can criticize everything without sort of recourse or repercussion. Like, it doesn't take anything to tweet something to somebody like, your product was crap. It takes 2 seconds. You don't even need to think about it again, but you've just affected that person in some way, maybe.
That's good stuff. And part of No Sidebar is keeping the show to about 30 minutes because I don't want to be not No Sidebar. So I'm going to cut us off like I always seem to do on the shows. I'm just going to cut it off right here and say, first of all, thank you so very much for, within a couple of days, hopping on Skype and doing the call to talk about it. I will link to the article as well as a few other things that you do that are great in the show notes, just so that people can see all of the stuff that you do and are capable of doing in hopes that your freelance future holds many, many great projects to work on. And again, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for having the courage to write the things that you do and the way that you do them. Because for me, and I'm sure hundreds and possibly thousands of other people, it helps them take action. And I look forward to talking to you again. Until we talk again, have a great probably couple of weeks, and I hope that we can talk about the hate thing.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. I had a good time talking to you today.
Well, there you have it, friends. Paul Jarvis on being digital hoarders. Go ahead and take a look at what Paul has to say over at pjrvs.com. If you like what you're hearing on the No Sidebar podcast, the best way to support the show is to leave a rating and or a comment over on iTunes. Want more? Check out nosidebar.com and sign up for our newsletter. Each week, we curate the very best and most interesting articles when it comes to designing a simple life, at work, at home, and in the soul. Until next week, this has been Brian Gardner.